D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 of the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Some of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan. I made the mistake during the break of pulling up Isaac Bruce's 73-yard touchdown pass in Super Bowl 34. Derek and I did a frame-by-frame breakdown. And then he screamed in anguish.
PTSD, man. It's just like, but I don't blame nobody but myself, because I sat there and I actually watched frame by frame. Denard was
in a
great position. It wasn't therapeutic.
I pulled this a few years ago.
Yeah, for those that say.
I said, Derek, watch the game. It'll be therapeutic to watch it. You've never watched it? And Derek, about 30 minutes later, I started watching it. I stopped. It wasn't therapeutic.
Things can be therapeutic, but watching games like that, watching that Super Bowl game, that is definitely not therapeutic. And then I blame Blaine, too, for trying to hit, what was it, big Ernie Mills? Was it Ernie Mills? No, it wasn't Ernie Mills. The big tight end.
Was it Torrey Holt?
No, it was the big tight end. He got put at, hurt his neck, and he was in hospital.
Scary.
Yeah, it was scary, real scary.
They stopped the game.
Who was he trying to hit? Why am I forgetting his name? He lived here in Nashville, too, for a minute. He may still live. Ernie Conwell. I think it was Ernie Conwell.
We'll look it up.
Yeah.
But he tried it was right after Ernie, that big that they Ernie. Scored to make it 16 to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose your all-pro safety, and you go down 16 nothing. It looked bleak. That's what was great about that game.
Ernie Cromwell, that's who it was.
There was one play, before we move on to these college football rivalry rankings by The Athletic, one play that did come up a couple of times on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, for the one Titans do-over, was the play where Derrick Henry broke his foot against the Colts during the 2021 season. One texter said, and I'm paraphrasing here because I can't find the text, that had Henry not injured himself on that play and missed the rest of the regular season, if I recall correctly, there was some initial reporting that the injury was season-ending. He did return for the Bengals game, had 20 rushing attempts for 62 yards. But the texter argued that if Derrick Henry did not break his foot on that play, he's playing, you know, he's hitting his stride going into the playoffs. He's more impactful in the game against the Bengals. Ryan Tannehill doesn't have to throw the ball as much, therefore not as many interceptions. So what do you think about that play and the rationale for that play?
Oh, man. I mean, I guess you can. In theory, say that, you know, if he doesn't break his foot, I believe he goes on and breaks the record, the rushing record for the season. I think that does happen. The Titans were already the number one seed, so it's not like they could have been even more of a number one seed. They were already the number one seed. So maybe that could have been, you know, because we all know Derrick Henry gets stronger as the season goes. And you got to prepare for him different when he's not coming back off an injury. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how high I would have that play ranked necessarily. But I would say, yeah.
Speaking of
the only thing that's murky about that to me, if I remember correctly, it's hard to know what play he broke it because he kept playing. He played the rest of that game, and he didn't do anything. And it was a great game, very exciting. But he was hobbling. You could tell he was hurting. And then, of course, the next day, you get the news. Mm-hmm. They won that game in pretty dramatic fashion. So I don't know if you could narrow it down to one play. And you could also maybe argue again in the quantum physics, what if he didn't break it then, it was like a stress-related thing. Eventually, it may have gone. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that is a great what if in general. I just don't know if you can boil it down to this subject in the one play.
Speaking of rankings, Scott Docterman, who was on Robbie and Rex Show this morning from The Athletic, he did a massive undertaking, ranking college football's 100 best rivalries. And I thought his process was interesting because in a separate post, he detailed the 11 principles and questions that he asked himself to gauge these rivalries. And I'll quickly run through them. Data. What do the numbers say? How many times have they met as ranked opponents? What is the win-loss disparity? Prominence. Does this rivalry involve high-profile or power conference programs? Relevance. Does it matter to their conference or to college football if these teams play each year? Trajectory. Is the series growing or retracting in importance? Frequency. Is this an annual series? Proximity. Are these teams in-state or border rivals? Competitiveness. Is this a series that ebbs and flows, or is it a hammer versus a nail? Moments. Were there games or plays that stand out decades later? Intensity. Is this a series both fan bases circle when the schedule comes out? Longevity. How many times have they competed against one another? And history. Are these teams longtime members of the same conference? So those were the 11 principles that Scott Docterman used to make this list. So the number one overall rivalry in college football, according to Scott Docterman, Michigan and Ohio State at number one. Here's the complete top 10 from 1 to 10. Michigan, Ohio State, Auburn and Alabama, Oklahoma and Texas, Army and Navy, USC and Notre Dame, Nebraska and Oklahoma, Miami and Florida State, Ohio State and Penn State, Florida and Florida State, and Minnesota and Wisconsin at number 10.
I think I got a beef.
One texter, Matthew, says, Tennessee-Bama being ranked number 11, which is true, is crazy enough. But being below Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Nebraska-Oklahoma is ludicrous. This is from Matthew in Nashville. You got a beef? Where's the beef?
The beef, for me, I think is a little bit, we're living in the past with USC-Notre Dame, aren't we? Like, when's the last time? Like, there just haven't been, there's been some good flickers, but year in and year out, I think that's lost what it had in the 60s and the 70s. And then, you know, Notre Dame took a little dip, and there's both programs have had a dip. It's a great one, but I just, that one's a little high for me.
Okay, so here is Docterman's
reasoning. I know there's going to be some alum, but Jeff Fisher is going to call, or Pete Weber is going to call. They're going to be like, hey, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Here is the reasoning from Docterman about why he put USC and Notre Dame at number five. They first met in 1926. They've met 95 times. He writes, USC-Notre Dame might seem like an unnatural rivalry, but that's the biggest reason why it's listed in the top five. It's a cross-country trip with no conference allegiance, yet these renowned programs have battled almost yearly for a century. In 13 games, either the Irish 8 or Trojans 5 were ranked number one. The teams have battled 35 times while ranked in the AP poll and faced off 18 times as top 10 foes. The most prominent matchup took place in 1988 when top-ranked Notre Dame beat second-ranked USC en route to the national title.
Boy, USC was ranked second? I don't remember them. Was that Rodney Pete? I remember. Yeah. That was a great run for Notre Dame, but the Notre Dame-Miami game, that was the signature game that year. I don't remember the Notre Dame.
The biggest game, 2005. Top-ranked USC had won 27 consecutive games, including the last two national titles, and had beaten number 9 Notre Dame 3 consecutive years by 31 points. Game of the century, right?
It's a good game. Mm.
Matt Leinart attempted to sneak from the Notre Dame 1-yard line and was stood up short of the goal. Reggie Bush shoved Leinart from behind and into the end zone.
So also known as the Bush Push.
Yeah.
The precursor to.
So when was the last time both teams were ranked in the top 10 and they played?
Let's see here. It says, I don't know when was the last time. It says in 13 games, either the Irish 8 or Trojans 5 were ranked number one. The teams have battled 35 times while ranked in the AP poll and 18 times as top 10 foes.
I guess if you're really doing the whole history of college football, it's hard to argue. Yeah. But it's just, I think, in more of a modern audience.
I don't look at it as a rivalry.
You're probably not going to think of that as much. But if you, no question, if you go through the decades and you're counting the 50s, 60s, 70s as much as you're doing now, I have to give it to you.
Let's give Derek Mason a little love here. Mm-hmm. Here are the times when Michigan State ends up on the list. And you tell me if these rivalries are properly ranked with the Spartans. Starting at the top. The first appearance for Michigan State, number 65, Michigan State-Penn State.
No.
Number 40.
Because you know why? Because Penn State didn't come into the Big Ten until 93, 94?
Right,
it might have been 94 because I got in college in 93, so it might have been 94, 95 they got into the Big Ten. I don't see that as...
That was number 65 on the list of 100.
Yeah, if you're going to rank, you need to rank the Michigan-Michigan State game higher than that.
Well, Michigan State-Notre Dame is 45. out of 100. Michigan and Michigan State is number 16.
They had that 16th class,
best rivalry.
They had that
Michigan and Michigan
State. Yeah, so 16, they need to, that's higher. That Michigan State Notre Dame, they always go back to that, the one, what was it, the... Was it the 13-13 game, something like that, the tie game?
10-10
tie. Yeah, 10-10 tie.
Yeah.
They always go back to that game. Yeah, one of the greatest games ever.
And like for more of a modern fan, you're like, a 10-10 game is the greatest game? But that, I remember growing up,
in 1966.
Yeah.
In 1966, Docterman writes, Michigan State and Notre Dame sit about 145 miles from one another, and that proximity made this a series of convenience. Mm-hmm. But their battles in the 50s and 60s and the constant swirl of upsets became legendary.
Yeah.
From 1948 through 2013, this became an annual series save for four seasons. The teams never played at a neutral site, and their game served as an early season barometer. The teams have 14 ranked matchups, with the Spartans holding an 8-5-1 lead. Four of those games qualified as upsets.
Hmm.
It makes you appreciate the Alabama-Auburn and Michigan-Ohio State.
Because of the longevity.
Because pick a year. You can just pick a year at random, and it's sustained itself for all these decades, both of those. What's number three behind those two?
Let's take a look. Number three, Oklahoma and Texas, the Red River,
Red River rivalry.
I mean,
it's
pretty
constant.
That 10 times
pretty constant.
Is Army-Navy up there?
Army-Navy is four.
Army-Navy, okay, four. Army-Navy is four.
So, as Matthew in Nashville said, and I believe Robbie had issue with this as well. So, Alabama-Tennessee. By the way, Tennessee appears on this list five times.
Is Alabama-Tennessee ahead of Tennessee-Florida?
Yes.
How do Vol fans feel about that? I don't know.
Here's where Tennessee... Yeah,
I think just the tradition of the... Because for a long time, Florida and Tennessee didn't even play each other every year. But Alabama, Tennessee always play each other.
Here's where Tennessee falls on this list. Again, five times. Hey, Tennessee and Vanderbilt, number 80 on the list.
I was going to say, better have my Commodores in there
somewhere. We'll touch on that more in depth in a minute. Tennessee and Vanderbilt, number 80. Tennessee and Kentucky, number 75. Tennessee and Georgia, number 53. Tennessee and Florida, number 36. Tennessee and Alabama, number 11.
Tennessee and Florida is 36? Wow.
Because
how do you feel about that,
More recent thing.
You think so because of that?
They used to not. First of all, they only used to play, seven conference games for a long time, which was really weird. And they, I don't know why, they didn't play every year. But then when they got into this, when they went to divisions in the early 90s, that's when they started playing every year, and they were both really, really powerful teams.
Docterman writes, Tennessee and Florida barely resonated for either fan base until they were forced to play one another every year in the SEC East.
Okay.
Once they did, the series sizzled and became the SEC's most competitive rivalry in the 1990s. It doesn't measure up when compared alongside these teams' historical feuds, but it's on the map. From 1916 through 1989, they played only 19 times. Since then, they have played 35 consecutive years, and both teams were ranked in the AP poll in 22.
So where does – because now that, you know, you have – where does the Texas and Oklahoma?
That was in the top five.
That was in the top five, okay.
That was number three,
Number three, okay. Yes, number three. Let's take a quick look back up to number 80 for a moment. Let's visit Tennessee and Vanderbilt.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
What to know? The in-state.
But hold on. Before you read that, isn't a rivalry when, you know, it's not lopsided in victory?
Well, hold that thought.
Hold on, D-Mace. Hold on.
The in-state aspect.
Let's just look at the last few years.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Now, if you said that, you know, when I was in school, I'd be like, yeah, he's got a point. He's kind of got a point.
Docterman writes, quote, the in-state aspect and total number of games put this series in the top 80.
Yeah.
But if both teams weren't located in Tennessee, it may not crack the top 100. From 1965 to 2004, Tennessee was 37-2-1.
Oh, wow.
The series has become more competitive in recent years, with Vandy winning 5 of 13 to give it some
there
more flavor.
At one point, it was 5 of 7, I think.
Yeah.
They had a run there where Tennessee hit a dip. Vanderbilt was good. They had the
they have met 118 times.
Right. That's. I think that's the thing about it. What was the first meeting? It was an
October 21st, 1892.
Like there's some Sons of Civil War veterans playing in that game.
There were horses pulling up to the stadium.
In true rivalry fashion, the teams can't agree on the total number of games.
Okay.
Vandy lists 119, while Tennessee has 118. It all stems from Vanderbilt counting a 76-0 win against Tennessee in 1918, while Vol suspended varsity football in 1917-18 during World War One and fielded two unofficial teams.
Y'all bad, Vandy. Vandy, y'all bad.
They're like, that's the B team.
Y'all bad.
That wasn't our
reason.
Vandy
y'all bad.
Won 18.
Vanderbilt's like, I don't care. They were wearing orange. It said Tennessee.
You stepped on the
we
field.
We played because we won.
Vandy won 18 of the first 22 games, which also included two ties. The Vols have compiled a 79-14-2 mark since 1928, separated by 180 miles along I-40 from Knoxville to Nashville. The teams have played 65 times on the season's final weekend. And he includes the biggest game. Willie, what is the biggest game, according to Scott Docterman, in Tennessee Vanderbilt history?
Ooh, the biggest game. You got to go back.
Well, of course, it was when Vanderbilt beat Tennessee to keep Tennessee out of a bowl game.
Both clinched bowl bids by their 1982 finale, but Vanderbilt was seeking its first home win against Tennessee since 1964. Commodores quarterback Whit Taylor was brilliant in passing for 391 yards and engineering a 28-21 win.
I'm going to look for that game tonight.
Vanderbilt fans stormed the field and tore down the goalpost. I don't think they brought it to the river, though. The next time Vandy beat Tennessee at home was in 2012, 30 years later.
And I was there.
Yes.
82 was before I discovered Vanderbilt. So I don't remember that game, but everybody talks
about
it.
So you don't claim them then?
Yeah. Yeah. I think recently the two great wins was the game where they knocked Alvin Kamara out of bounds prior on fourth down. He kind of went out of bounds, shy of the marker. That was a pretty good Tennessee team. Not a great one, but a good one. And that was a big win. Probably Derek Mason's greatest win. And then there was another great Derek Mason moment where both teams needed a win to get to a bowl game, and Vanderbilt got to a bowl game and knocked Tennessee out in the process. That was a Jeremy Pruitt game. I know Tennessee fans tried to erase all memories of Jeremy Pruitt.
Who?
That was a fun Saturday.
615-737-1025. Scott Docterman of The Athletic. By the way, he joined Robbie and Rex Road this morning, so if you want to hear him explain it, be sure to listen to that interview wherever you listen to your podcast. He has a list ranking the 100 greatest rivalries in college football. Tell me your favorite rivalry. I'll see where it is on the list. 615-737-1025. Hey, tomorrow afternoon, come out to Brewhouse South in Cool Springs and meet Nashville native and two-time IndyCar champion Joseph Newgarden from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Also, Big Joe Dubin will be on site for a special broadcast of Chasing Checkers from 6 to 7. So get out to Brewhouse South tomorrow and meet Joseph Newgarden and get signed up to win tickets to the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix. Hey, tune in to ESPN 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Durham Bulls. Pre-game begins at 5:20 and the first pitch is at 5:35. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you talking Scott Docterman's ranking at The Athletic of the 100 best rivalries in college football. One texter mentioned MTSU and Western Kentucky, also known as 100 Miles of Hate. Well, guess what, texter? Middle Tennessee and Western Kentucky did make the list at number 99.
We'll take it.
As Scott Docterman writes,
100 miles of hate.
The 100 miles of hate. Their first meeting came in 1914. They have met 74 times. As Scott Docterman notes, Western Kentucky and MTSU has lasted through three conferences and several years of independent status to become Conference USA's most played series. The teams consider one another their top rival, with the series unofficially known as, of course, 100 Miles of Hate. The teams were longtime members of the Ohio Valley Conference and moved to FBS at different times, MTSU in 1999, Western Kentucky in 2007. They resumed their series in 2007 and have played every year but 2013 four times. From 2010 through 2017, the games went into overtime, and twice they became triple overtime thrillers. That's a big part of a rivalry. Overtime
games. Because I didn't hear you. Auburn, Georgia rank. That has to be a top 5, 10.
Auburn, Georgia.
Yeah.
Let's take a look. 17.
17.
17.
Deep South oldest rivalry.
Michigan and Michigan State, 16.
Yes. I'm trying to Florida, Georgia. What is that ranking?
Florida, Georgia.
That's got to be top 20.
Let's see. Florida, Georgia. Georgia, I believe, was on this list 7 times.
Oh, wow.
Which was the most. Okay, hold on. All right, hold on. There's a lot of searching I'm having. Georgia and Florida was number 12.
Okay.
Is that, what is it called? The biggest cocktail party? The world's largest?
the world's largest
outdoor.
Outdoor. It has to be outdoor. My bad. It's not indoors. They can't be indoors.
That's right.
Okay.
Texas A&M.
I think it encompasses most indoor cocktail parties that you'd have to check, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a bigger one than that.
Texas and Texas A&M. Let's see. I'm still looking for it. Come on. Mm. Texas and Arkansas. All right. Texas and Texas A&M is 15th on the list.
Okay. Hmm. I'm only really trying to look for SEC schools.
LSU, Alabama?
Yeah.
LSU, Alabama. I think that was I think that was 13th on the list. 13th.
Hmm. Which one of the...
Egg Bowl. The Egg Bowl?
Yeah. That was in the 20s. That was in the 20s. One texter was quite upset.
That it was in the 20s.
Yes.
Hmm.
One texter says, how is Harvard and Yale number 20?
Because that is called the game.
Yes.
I have been to a Harvard-Yale game in the Harvard Bowl.
It's not a game. It's the game.
That's right.
Docterman writes, U.S. presidents have coached in and attended the game. And some of the nation's most impactful leaders have donned Harvard jerseys and Yale helmets. Harvard-Yale doesn't determine a national champion, but its legacy is so tethered to college football history that to extract it would be to remove the entire sport from its existence.
My roommate for the Medicine Hat Blue Jays in 1993, we had a fun summer at Medicine Hat, and I went and visited him for the Harvard-Yale The Game. That fall, I had never been to it before. He was a two-sport guy, like I was at Harvard. He played some football at Harvard. And I can tell you that there were very few sober people in the Harvard Bowl.
That doesn't surprise me.
Before, during, and after the game. Oh. And I was one of them. I waited until after the game.
You joined
I enjoyed the game while it was going on. I kind of just flew in, and it was like a noon start.
Uh-huh.
But it was good stuff.
In 1968, Yale entered the game on a 16-game winning streak, and both teams were 8-0. The Bulldogs led Harvard 29-13 midway through the fourth quarter before the Crimson cut its deficit to 8 points with a touchdown and two-pointer with 42 seconds left. Harvard recovered the onside kick and scored a touchdown and a two-pointer with no time left for the tie. The headline in the Crimson student paper said it all. Harvard beats Yale 29-29.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing like some eggheads.
That's a famous one. The one I went to was not as good.
Nothing like some eggheads.
Stanford, California.
Stanford, Cal. That's got to be in there, right?
Let's take a look.
They had the infamous.
Well, I mean, that alone.
Yes, that alone should.
The band is out on the field. The band is on the field.
That is number 29.
Okay. I mean, it must have moved up at least 10 spots
after
because
that
of that
one,
game.
Yes.
If I recall correctly, it was a trombone player who was
that's who got
was trampled. Yeah. Yeah. And as a former trombone player myself.
Oh, man.
Hey, we got to care for trombone players as well.
There are so many great documentary type things on that play where they talk about some of the illegal blocks that may or may not have occurred.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, some ladderies look like the guy's down and still got the lateral off. And all the stories from all the perspectives, including the trombone player who got smashed at the end.
Ran through.
He is the funniest guy to listen to talk about it because he tells great stories about it.
How do you feel about Michigan and Michigan State, Derek Mason, being 16th on this list?
You know,
the first meeting in 1898.
Hey, it's, 16. I think we could have been a little bit higher, but I take 16. I think it's always a heated rivalry, at least from, a state standpoint.
Every in-state rivalry has passion and intensity, but this one often boils over the top.
Yeah, we don't like
it. It's probably the most vicious in-state rivalry with pregame and postgame altercations between players, some of which have led to player arrests.
Bro,
it's also a competitive series involving two of the Big Ten's better programs, which is why that ranks most in-state rivalry.
We do not like them. The coaches don't like them. If you have played for the Michigan State Spartans, you hate everything, and I mean everything about about Michigan. Hate everything about them. Okay, everything. Scum University.
Unpredictability elevates Michigan State into one of the nation's best. The Spartans have 11 wins against the Wolverines when they're ranked in the top seven, including an upset of number one Michigan in 1990. Yeah. And despite Michigan's overall edge in the series, Michigan State is 11-7-1 when both teams are ranked. Michigan running back Mike Hart called Spartans little brother in 2007.
And whooped up on
and the slight fueled Michigan State and coach Mark D'Antonio for the next decade. The Spartans then won 8 of the next 10.
Yeah, whooping them up.
What do you think the biggest game, according to Scott Dochterman, in Michigan State history is?
The biggest game was the block punt.
Trouble with the snap?
The block punt, because Michigan, the only thing they had to do was block. The only thing they had to do was get the punt off, and they win the game. That's all they had to do, get the punt off, because it wasn't enough seconds left to actually get anything. All they had to do was get rid of the punt.
Michigan, biggest game, about a dozen games could qualify, but none rates as high as their 2015 encounter.
There you go.
Yep.
Number 12 Michigan led number 7 Michigan State 23-21 with 10 seconds left. Mm-hmm. A bobbled snap on a punt led to a mid-air scoop by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, who returned the fumble for a touchdown with no time remaining. The victory led the Spartans to the Big Ten title and a playoff berth.
Yep, we ended up getting beat down by Alabama. I went to that game, too. Woo-hoo, my son wanted to leave early. He was like, Dad, they're losing. He was mad they were getting beat down. I was like, nope, we got to stay the whole game, bro.
They had that was in Dallas.
Yeah, it was in Dallas.
The Predators were playing the Stars that
same night. I remember that. I was there.
And the
not
Stars,
at the game, but
the
in Dallas.
The Stars destroyed the Predators. So mm-hmm. there were a lot of people in a bad mood for New Year's Eve in Dallas.
Misery
that
loves
night.
Company.
Yeah, exactly. There were a lot of Spartan fans coming back moping.
Exactly.
We were coming back moping. We're like, oh, man, y'all lost it.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that had to be.
And if I recall correctly, the Predators and Michigan State were staying at the same hotel.
Yeah, the Omni. Yeah. We were all together. Mm-hmm. It was Misery Loves Company. Absolutely.
I do remember
we drank
that.
Our sorrows.
Well, Derek, maybe you can give us.
I was staying in the same hotel.
We were all there. We didn't even know.
It's huge.
It's a big hotel.
Yes.
It is a big hotel. So a lot of people, I know Robbie and Joe talked about this morning, Alabama, Tennessee being number 11, being knocked out of the top 10 by Minnesota and Wisconsin. As a Big Ten alum, put into context the importance of the Minnesota-Wisconsin rivalry.
You got to understand, I didn't watch much of that rivalry until, like, I was in the NFL and watching those teams play. So it's important to them. But when I think of rivalries, I don't really – that's not the first thing that come to mind. I'm saying that particular game. It's not one of the first things that come to mind.
Scott Dochterman writes, perhaps no other border feud contains the ecstasy of victory and misery and defeat. Like Minnesota, Wisconsin, they are codependent. That's a good word. Big Ten rivals in every sense of the word.
That's because they can see one another from state to state, basically.
While the Badgers have been more successful the last three decades, the result of this game impacts how every season is remembered for both teams. They have played each other 134 times.
So I guess if you're asking Minnesotan or a West...
Is it a Wisconsinite? A Wisconsinite?
That sounds right.
So if you ask those two fan bases, they would probably say yes. But I think if you go outside of that, it's like, huh? Like, why? Because y'all live, like, I can see your city. You can see mine from across. What is that? It's not Lake Michigan. Oh, gosh. I forget what lake it is.
One texter was mad that the Egg Bowl was ranked so low. They said it was BS. The Egg Bowl is number 23. Ole Miss.
I feel like this is the appropriate time also to insert. We're talking about these bitter rivalries and you hate the other team. We should point out that Chris Sanders did pick against his alma mater in the Michigan
Ohio
State.
And we will be sure to remind him of that as soon as Silly Underdog Picks starts up.
Yes, this fall.
This
fall. It will come back up. And he could have won the title without that win.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he won. He won that game. I still think he's got to feel a little bit dirty for doing that.
What I heard is that an Ohio State representative showed up at his door the next day and said, "Chris, your diploma, please." And the representative pulled out a lighter and burned his diploma in front of his face.
after we said, we told him that's what they were going to do anyway. It was going to revoke all of his privileges, even coming into the state of Ohio. They were going to take away his Buckeyes on his helmet.
Not his Buckeyes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. If you pick against your team, that's enough. But then you pick against them when they're playing Michigan.
The best rivalry.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. They erased your name off of everything.
There was a list that accompanied this story, ranking the top rivalry names. Like the Egg Bowl or the Holy War or the Iron Bowl. Number one on the list, the Brawl of the Wild, Montana versus Montana State.
The Brawl of the Wild.
I mean, that's a pretty I've never heard that.
There are some good ones on here that I had never heard of. For example, David Janes, UAB versus Memphis is known as the...
I totally forgot.
The Battle for the Bones.
Oh, yes.
The Battle of the Bones?
The Battle for the Bones.
What kind of bones is it?
Well, this also technically is named because of its trophy, a bronze rack of ribs.
Yep. We love our ribs.
I was thinking about ribs. I was like, surely that's not it.
A bronze rack of ribs.
A bronze rack of ribs. Like, wow. Okay. Okay.
Here's the top 10 from 10 to 1. The Soul Bowl, Jackson State versus Alcorn State, Mississippi's two largest HBCUs. The Biggest Little Game in America, Amherst versus Williams. Farmageddon, Kansas State versus Iowa State.
Farmageddon.
Deeper Than Hate, Appalachian State versus Georgia Southern.
Okay.
The World's Largest Outdoor Cocktail Party, Florida versus Georgia. The Iron Bowl, Alabama versus Auburn. The Holy War, BYU versus Utah. Battle for the Bones, UAB versus Memphis. Bedlam, Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State. And Brawl of the Wild, Montana versus Montana.
There you go. Where is BYU Utah ranked? Because I just remember on
the rivalry list.
Because I can remember last year stumbling upon. I just was flipping around. I got back from a hockey game, and I'm like, okay, what games are on? That game was on. It was a great game. As we know, BYU had a really good season.
They 28. Were
28.
28. The Holy War.
I was impressed about the atmosphere in that game. The red and the blue, there's something that was a cool atmosphere.
How about Cincinnati, Miami, Ohio? Battle for the Bell.
I want to see this bronze rack of ribs, personally.
What does it look like?
Is it a trophy?
It's a trophy.
Oh, wow.
Allegedly.
Supposedly. Why? There are two battles for the Bell.
I do love this one.
Cincinnati or Miami, Ohio, and Marshall in Ohio.
I love this one. Clean old fashioned hate. Georgia versus Georgia Tech.
Ooh.
I like that one. The Seafaring Scuffle. The U.S. Merchant Marine versus SUNY Maritime. The Coal Bowl. Indiana of Pennsylvania versus California.
Battle of the Iron Skillet. Where is that one ranked? SMU TCU.
Battle of the Iron Skillet.
I need to see that trophy.
I love this one. The Real HU, Howard versus Hampton. I like that one.
I think Farmageddon still gets the award for me.
Some honorable mentions quickly. The Beehive Bowl, Weber State versus Southern Utah. Mm-hmm. Battle of the Brothers, Utah versus Utah State. The Old Mountain Feud, Appalachian State versus Marshall.
Utah versus Utah State is the Battle of the Brothers?
The Battle of the Brothers.
Yes. Is it because there are a lot of brothers? Because
could be.
We know about, you know. They multiply out there. The Mormons.
And with that, 615-737-1025.
A lot of actual brothers.
Our phone and text line driven by Wilson County.
Here you go there.
Okay. Coming up next, Willie alluded to it when we were talking to Tim Hasselbeck, but he is going to introduce something we're going to do later this week, and we want you to get involved. So coming up next as we wrap up the show, Willie will introduce the assignment. It's not really an assignment.
Optional.
It's optional.
No, I'm going to make it mandatory. Mandatory.
Oh, okay. Professor Mason.
Yeah, mandatory.
Okay.
Optional, mandatory. Mandatory, optional.
We'll figure that out during the break. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D. Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Jared Stillman still on vacation, so you will be graced by the presence of Jake Lyman and Connor Newt. Starting at 2 o'clock. Parker Kelly, too. I enjoyed the show yesterday.
Hey, Parker out.
What?
Don't leave Parker out.
Of course not. Absolutely. I would never leave Parker out.
There we go.
I'm sure both of them stayed up late playing College Football 26.
It's out? It just came out?
If you paid like $100, it's
out. Which they probably did.
Which is an insane amount of money to pay for a video game.
Yeah, they probably did it. Because if they're like my son, I tell you for sure, yep, they got it.
I feel like the most I've ever paid for a video game is like maybe $60, $50, $60.
Really? Remember when they were like $20?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were like $20. The good games, new games that come out. Yeah? Nope. No longer.
Yes, if you pre-ordered it and paid for a certain version, and Connor and Jake can correct me, I believe it was $100 to access it early. Money well spent, I suppose. Matthew in Nashville says, it's not D1, but Carson Newman versus, Tusculum should be an honorable mention on that rivalry list. The second oldest rivalry in Tennessee, with their first meeting occurring in 1904. They can't stand each other. In fact, one year, both teams each snuck onto the other's campus in the middle of the night, one night trashing the field and spray painting curse words in a certain body part all over the field and buildings.
Oh, wow.
Not going to say which male body part. Y'all can use your imagination.
Man, we used to have to, they used to make students guard the Spartan statue before the Michigan game. Somebody would be out there that whole week. Somebody would be tasked to guard that statue day and night, day and night.
We at American, we didn't really have any fierce rivalries.
No?
Y'all didn't?
No. American Holy Cross, American Lehigh, American Lafayette.
Everything had American in it first.
Yes.
Okay.
No fierce rivalries.
In
the Patriot League. Except for Lafayette and Lehigh. That is a storied rivalry that goes back a long way. But American, we didn't really have any storied rivalries.
Y'all didn't get hyped for a game? Like, did y'all consider somebody a rival? Not necessarily that everybody else did.
Who would be the biggest rival?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
What? You have to think about
it?
It wasn't like American was a top flight athletic program in anything.
Neither is MTSU, but they still.
I'll do that research. I'll do that research.
Shots fired at my alma mater.
I personally didn't like Holy Cross, the basketball team, because there was one guy on that team who had a very punchable face, whose name I can't remember. I was like, man, if I had the nerve, I'd smack that guy.
So that was your rival. There you go.
The one big guy on Holy Cross back in 2007. But we do have an assignment. Willie says it's optional. Derek says it's optional but mandatory.
Yes. I mean, it's a free country. We can't go check everybody.
It does remind me of when I was in high school. As I mentioned when we were talking about the band is on the field, I played trombone in high school. Shocker for some of you, I'm sure. Quite good at it too, by the way. First chair all city.
Nice.
Not going to lie. Nothing to brag about. Anyway, I was in marching band my freshman year in high school because it was required to be in the top band at my high school. You had to participate in marching band. But that changed from 9th grade to 10th grade. It went from required to highly recommended. So I walked into my band instructor's office, Mr. Wills. And here's the one thing I remember about Mr. Wills. Man needed to shave because he had chest hair coming out of the collar of his T-shirt.
Oh, that's tough.
And I said, Mr. Wills.
Taco meat.
I said, Mr. Wills, if it's highly recommended, I'm not doing it. And he didn't love that. Yeah. But it's not required, this assignment. Yeah. But I would say it's highly recommended. So, Willie, why don't you introduce
it? It's a fun assignment.
If you're into fun.
Yeah, it's
if
a you're fun into assignment. Fun,
you'll if you guys it. Love fun.
Yeah, if you like fun.
Listen up.
If you're a football guru, football enthusiast, and we're all in the same place, right? It's July. We've got a few weeks before training camp starts back up, and then we've got SEC Media Days coming. Right now, we're in a little bit of a desert for football content. So we thought, let's have some fun, and let's just see how the game of football over the last 40 years at the NFL level has changed or not changed. And so I picked a game, and I like to do this from time to time, for a lot of baseball, but I'll do it for basketball and football as well. Just go back and watch old games with really good broadcasters, nostalgic, and I just love to just listen to the broadcast while I'm jogging, but I like to watch part of it as well. And I get a kick out of it, and everybody has the same reaction when I tell them I do this. Like, Willie, do you have too much free time? Can I help you, like, find other hobbies or something?
You need a,
like,
hobby or something?
Yeah. Because some people that I know that you would think would like to watch an occasional old game, they have no interest at all. But I had the idea to watch a game that was one that I remembered as a kid. It's 1986, week 3. So we're going to tweet this out if you want to participate with this. Because I thought it would be fun for a couple of young bucks, like mm-hmm. Adam and David,
yeah,
who were not watching this game back in the day, just to watch an old game and see what looks very different, what looks the same, what jumps out at you. The commercials, mm-hmm. all of that stuff.
Everything.
I asked D-Maze to do the same thing, but also look at the scheme mm-hmm. and see what looks the same and what's different about how teams approach and game plan compared to now. We actually asked Tim Hasselbeck this earlier today. He had a really interesting answer that there were some things that literally were not invented scheme-wise
you're right.
back then, how teams schemed up. So I thought it would be fun. It's a great Dolphins-Jets game that is fantastic from start to finish. It's got Dick Enberg, one of the great announcers of all time, and Merlin Olsen, who was a great player mm-hmm. and also an actor on Little House on the Prairie. If you're our age, you know that he was in there. But that was the number one announcing team. They did Super Bowls together. Mm-hmm. So this was a featured game. Dan Marino in his prime, Don Shula and the Dolphins against a good Jets team that they just had a great hated rivalry. We were just talking about rivalries of college. The Jets-Dolphins back in that time, they had some great, great games, and that was one of them. So I won't tell you who won the game, but I will tell you that it is very entertaining start to finish. So we want to give people a couple of days and let them know that we're doing this, but if you're looking for something to do and you want to have some fun with us, we're going to circle back and have a discussion about mm-hmm. what we saw, because it's hilarious some of the things that you'll see. The fans in the stands and the fashion at the time. What you'll say, you know, for example, I'll give you one that's going to be obvious to you and watch it. There's no yellow line for the first down. Mm-hmm. You won't have any idea if the guy got the first down or not. You might have an idea, mm-hmm. but you won't see it on the line. Replay was brand new at the time. There'll be a lot of discussion on that. Your fantasy football scores, how you got them and absorb them during the game. These are the things that I'm just curious what people would have jump out at them. So because we're in July and we love football and there's no football going on, this is your assignment. Should you choose to accept it?
Yeah, it was interesting just to sit down and 'cause I haven't done that in a good while, especially not games that far back. It's interesting to go back and watch these games. And the one thing that I sort of noticed outside of some of the fun things is that the field was condensed. And what I mean by condensed is you look at today's football, they use, and Tim talked about this, they use every inch of the field. They try to pressure every inch of the field. And as the years went on, you started seeing that more and more happen. Now, Miami was doing it somewhat with their passing game, but you saw the New York Jets, they had a condensed field. A lot of packages that you see today, you saw them then, but they were condensed. They were done out of two-back formations and not out of three wides. They were done out of two tight ends and not out of four wides. So I think a lot of things that you see on offense, some of the things, not a lot, but some of the things, it's there back then, but it's condensed. Now, same sort of the same plays, but they've opened up the field now. They are doing it three and four wides instead of two tight ends, two receivers or two backs, two receivers or three receivers, something like that. So the field has widened, so to speak. And, you know, they're using every inch of the back of the end zones on either side.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to tweet out the game, which you can find on YouTube. We will tweet it out from our 1025 The Game account. We will share it a few times over the next couple of days. Our plan is on Thursday to go over what we found. Mm-hmm. So if you want to participate, we'll share the link on Twitter/X. We'll do it a couple of times over the next couple of days with the plan to review and share what we found on Thursday, probably in the 1 o'clock hour. But that is your assignment, as Willie said, if you choose to accept it, a la Mission Impossible. Speaking of Mission Impossible, here comes Jake Lyman and Connor Newt. Let's see if they can suck up as much air as Jared Stillman over the course of 4 hours. Again, Mission Impossible. Love you. Kidding. We'll be back at 11 o'clock. I don't know where I was going with that joke. I started it. It did not go well. I committed to the bit.
At least you tried.
At least I tried.
Yeah, at least you tried.
The lesson is never try. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to get out of here before I say something else stupid. Stillman & Company with Jake and Connor coming up next.
Be loved, love your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Tuesday. Peace.